my understanding, something is not quite right.
Yes, it probably needs to be calibrated. The problem with most standard SWR meters that we have is they're relatively inexpensive. And so there's a lot of variation. Even the much preyed upon third watt meters are only accurate to plus or minus 5% of total deflection, which can be for a 100-watt plug. You know, that's plus or minus 5 watts either way. That's significant. You know, that could make your 15 watts into 20 watts. But for the most part, that's a better rating than most of the other SWR meters. And their accuracy is determined also by the frequency it's detecting. If you calibrate your SWR meter for 20 meter band, and then you go kind of testing it on 80 meters, chances are it's going to be somewhat off spec. So unfortunately, I have the same thing. I find that actually digital SWR meters are more annoying because, you know, you can kind of look cross-eyed and reassess where the needle is pointing. But, you know, if something, you know, reads something ridiculous, and, you know, I have something like two or three digital SWR meters connected in series, and never are two of them very close to the same results. You know, for SWR even, I have one that says it's 1.06, another that says it's 1.34, another one that says it's 1.22. You know, what do you do, average it? That's approximately what I end up doing, but I don't know if that's the best solution to a problem like this.
What about the insertion loss with three SWR meters?
Well, I have a comment on that, too.
Yeah, there's very little insertion loss. They're built into the devices, so, you know, there's nothing much you can do. Your antenna tuner has an SWR meter. Your radio has an SWR meter. Your linear amplifier has an SWR meter. So you can't kind of take them out of series. So, fortunately, a well-designed SWR meter has a very small attenuation loss.
A follow-up.
Sure.
Okay. Well, it's rigged to the CN-901 diode meter to the bird dummy load. So, again, 25 watts out on transmit, on AM, meter reads 15 watts. Now, the only calibration that I could see in the instructions and on the meter are the two cross needles, which are perfectly centered on zero. So if there's any additional calibration, it must be internal, I would think. Or do I just chalk it up as an inaccurate piece of equipment?
There are internal adjustments. There are little screw-operated potentiometers that can calibrate it. If you have a copy of a service manual, it goes into detail usually about it. But these are all internal. They're not meant to be tweaked, just for the heck of it. You have to have a good calibrated power supply and a calibrated load. But once you have those, you can do it. But again, it's not inherently calibrated across the spectrum. You know, if you calibrate it specifically at 40 meters, it means it's calibrated at 40 meters. How it drifts as you go up to 10 meters, it depends upon the device. But the problem is that don't consider these things laboratory-grade measuring equipment. They're far from it.
Well, this one was not cheap, and far from it, actually. And I'll tell you something, I'm a little disappointed in the readings that it's giving me because they're inaccurate.
Well, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, lab equipment can go for thousands and thousands of dollars. So I doubt that you spent thousands and thousands of dollars for a Dewa. I would assume you spent $150, which, you know, certainly is not free. But, again, as far as lab-grade equipment, it's not. These, you know, real lab-grade equipment is calibrated to the National Institute of Standards. Dick, K2IW, may rest in peace, used to joke repeatedly that answers to questions were calibrated for accuracy. You know, that's expensive equipment. You're talking, some lab equipment, easily people ask, you know, $10,000 for the stuff. So, you know, your $150 or maybe $200 a day is not the lab grade. It's not calibrated. It doesn't come with a certificate.
Anyone has a CN-901 or similar Daiwa meter, if you key up on AM, no modulation, just straight carrier, okay, and you're putting out 25 watts from the rig, and it's measuring 15, well, that's way, way over the 10% plus or minus that's quoted.
Okay, Wesley recognized. It's not the plus or minus of the measurement. It's plus or minus the full deflection of the measuring equipment, usually the way a measuring equipment is measured. Wesley, what do you want to say?
I'm trying to find out what is the reason for this whole discussion. In reality, truly lossless SWR doesn't exist. All practical SWR meters and the transmission lines, they connect to the same, to have the same amount of insertion loss, meaning they dissipate a small amount of power as a heat when measuring the signal. So SWR meters are designed, there are some of them, with very low insertion loss for practical purposes, which are considered good enough. So the discussion is about this and that and this and that, but always we have good enough, eventually, for somebody to be treated as nearly lossless in most amateur radio and commercial applications. Do you agree with that?
Yes, I kind of mentioned that earlier on. That for the sake of expenses and what we're doing, it usually suffices. But if you have, as we often do, multiple pieces of equipment that are often in line with each other, that all are supposed to give you the same values and none of them do, it can be annoying. It's not a kill deal for amateur radio. You don't kind of just throw everything out the next day and pick up coin collecting. But still, I could sort of understand. I would love, you know, I'm the type of guy who synchronizes his clocks, because I have three clocks staring at me right now, and I would hate for all three of them to show me a different time. You can't really kind of do that with SWR meters unless you're really willing to get in there and calibrate them and stay on the same band, so you kind of live with it. But I could understand where it could be annoying to kind of stare at three different numbers for the same value.
DDH with a comment.
Sure, John.
With SWR bridges, SWR meters, the big, culprit or maybe the more expensive part of it is the directional coupler. This is a device that takes a sniff of the forward power and a sniff of the reflected power and displays them on your meter. You can spend quite a bit of money for a directional coupler all by itself. I think you mentioned $150, $200 for the whole power meter SWR bridge. You can easily spend that kind of money for a directional coupler. That is the thing where the accuracy or lack of accuracy comes in. I have a little Amico SWR bridge sitting on top of here, and I've opened it up, and the directional coupler there is, it works, but it's just simply a piece of through transmission line with some parallel lines to couple in the forward direction and couple in the reverse direction. As far as getting an SWR reading, because SWR is a reading of the forward and reflected power to see what's what. So it's really built around a directional coupler. You spend some money on a directional coupler and build your SWR meter around that, you should get better results. And also, yes, the calibration process for power meters. I have an old HP 435. And it has a built-in little calibrator RF source in there to calibrate the various different power heads on it. Go ahead.
Yeah, by the way, Wes recognized, Wes, you can't double with someone to tell them you want to talk next. You have to wait for them to unkey. Yeah, John.
I'm agreeing with what he's saying about the directional coupler, but kind of the point I'm getting at is, what do you connect to the directional coupler? Because the directional coupler, yes, you could easily spend a few hundred dollars on for a good one, but a good power meter is going to cost you a lot more than that. And, you know, you can put a diode, a detector on there, and there's probably a lot to talk about with RF detector diodes. This is basically how a bird works, and we know they're not the most amazingly accurate thing, but they do a pretty good job of it. So it's really, to me, yeah, the directional coupler matters. There's a lot of talk about isolation, directivity, those kind of things, but what you attach to that really matters as well. You can spend a lot of money on just a single detector. Some of those diode detectors that they sell for lab-grade RF detection are hundreds of dollars alone, just for the diode, KEC2SHO.
Yeah, I mean, what we're ultimately discussing is the concept of accuracy, and the point is that in a perfect world, there's perfect accuracy, but we live in an imperfect world. So all of our equipment is plus or minus some percent, depending often upon how much we paid for it, when was the last time we had it calibrated with a known standard, which is usually never. And so you have to kind of understand that the investment that most hams have made is in a less than accurate measuring device that can then kind of, as time goes on, just drift to even less accuracy. So you either accept that or you take out your calibrated standards and your book on how to calibrate these particular SWR meters, or you just kind of live with the variations. And that's, I think, 99.9% of hams do just that. Very few take the trouble to recalibrate their equipment once they buy it. If it seems to be vaguely similar to what they expect, they just continue with it. But, you know, there are people out there who do calibrate, and, you know, there are people who work in places where all their equipment have little labels on them of the date that they were last sent to a calibration facility.
KD2FIU.
Yes, George.
Precisely. Precisely, and that's exactly what I have. Bootend RF meters, and that's what I calibrate against. And I basically, I have a Bootend analog meter, which I send out every 3 years. And I calibrate it against 3 volts. It's a millivolt analog meter down to incredible micro volts of equipment. I send it out every 3 years, and I do have a voltage multiplier. I bring that too, and I will calibrate all of my meters to that when I get it back.
Okay, very good. You know, I mean, I'm sure the calibration labs would like to hear that all of us should do that. But, yeah, I mean, unfortunately, you're the exception to the rule. Most guys, I seriously doubt, do that. You have much better results with your measurements than we do. But, you know, the nature of the hobby, kind of most of us just try to get by. And, again, it's a little annoying to see different digits light up on my three different devices connected to the same exact thing. But you kind of, you know, deal with it as best you can.
PC? Hold on, Roy. I was trying to give an idea there on where you have a basis to start with.
Yes, I understand that.
Okay, thanks, Roy. KD2FIU.
WTBC?
Yeah, Rich.
WTBCV, comment?
Yeah, I was wondering, what does the rig say? What does your radio say in terms of power and SWR? And how much is that what you're comparing it against? And that's what's off? Go ahead.
I'm just saying that there's a bunch of different machines that happen to have SWR indicators and watt meters. And I've never seen two of those things give me the exact same number four significant digits. SWRs that fluctuate plus or minus 0.2 or 0.3. Watts are kind of more difficult because I operate mostly single sideband, so it's very specific to the modulation. It's not a full-duty type of AM transmission, but the same difference. They all kind of fluctuate around a point but never really coincide with them.
Comment?
Yes, Sam? I think it was Sam who asked comment. If not, then the first person, Wes is second. He said comment as well. But the first person who said comment, please talk.
Yes, this is K2BCV, Gene. As far as an SWR meter is concerned, if you have a 50-ohm non-inductive load that can handle the power and you put it on the output of the SWR meter and then key up, you should get a 1.1-to-1 reading. That's with a non-inductive resistive load that can handle the power. Go ahead.
Yeah, theoretically, yes. You know, if it's off calibration, it might read something a little different. So the problem is that a lot of digital devices really like their significant numbers. So most SWR digital indicators, you know, go to, you know, 1.02, which is, you know, I think within the range of the specs for these things. And also, one man's dummy load is not another man's dummy load. If I use an MFJ dummy load, I am less sure that I'm going to get exactly 1.00 versus, you know, a Hewlett-Packard or some industrial value dummy load that instead of costing a couple hundred dollars costs a couple of thousand dollars.
KD2FIU.
Yeah, George?
Does it matter whether that dummy load will bring you to 1.12 versus 1.02? It doesn't matter.
Ultimately, yeah, and that's, again, why I don't do anything about my SWR meters that are not exactly identical. But, again, I can identify with someone who would like to see something closer to that happen. Again, maybe I'm the crazy guy. I like to synchronize. If I have a room with a bunch of timekeeping devices, especially, it's very easy for PC-based because they'll synchronize themselves. But I tend to ultimately, after it drifts a bit, like to synchronize them. I like to see the same number for the same value. But I understand and I appreciate it and I agree with you. And, it's a shame. I think Ed's not around tonight, but he's the first one to kind of say, you know, keep it simple. And in the end, you know, the details don't really matter.
BZ?
Yes, Rich?
I was just a little confused. He's saying that the meter is not accurate, but compared to what? The meter in his radio? I'm confused.
In the case of okay, Brian, tell him yourself.
I am basically using two radios. I'm using an FT710 and an FTDX10, 25 watts out on AM, going to the meter, going into a bird dummy load, and that is 150 watts, and I'm getting consistent reading of 15 on each word.
So you are comparing it to your radio?
That is correct. Two radios.
Okay, and your outboard external SWR meter is not agreeing with two radios? And are the radios agreeing with each other?
Well, since the radios, the FT710 is a, as you well know, it's a SDR, and the FTDX10 is a hybrid SDR, but they're both set for 25 watts AM, and I would like to think that they're putting out 25 watts AM, as I don't have another meter to test with just yet, but it's reading 15 watts on the carrier.
I would trust your radio power meter and your radio SWR meter. I have a cheap digital SWR meter and it's bang on with my ICOM 7300. I mean it's within a watt or two of both agreeing with each other, and the SWRs are right on also. So, I don't know. I would trust the FTDX10. I would trust that power meter more than I would an external meter.
Well, I bought it because of stability and testing, and I'm saying to myself, wow, you know, this is not giving me the accuracy that I want. So I have to go ahead and borrow another meter from a friend of mine and see how much of a difference there is.
I bet you it says 25 watts, your friend's meter.
I don't know. I have to try it and see. Matter of fact, he has the exact same meter that I do. Just coincidentally, the CN901HP. So I'll go ahead and borrow his meter and check it. But I'm assuming that it looks to me from the both the ASU radios that they are putting out 25 watts.
I bought another meter, the same one as the one that I have. That's agreeing with my radio. I bought the exact same meter, and it was about 10 watts off. I returned it. It was about 10 watts off, so that could very well be a calibration issue.
I just did a Google search for a service manual, Roy, on the CN901HP. I can't find one. I can only find an operation manual.
Yeah, unfortunately, something like that, they wouldn't really promote that much. They don't really want people fiddling with it. But if you go on forums, you might be able to pick up some information from people who've noodled around inside the chassis and can give you some pictures and some good ideas of how to adjust the calibration settings.
Maybe I should call Daiwa up and ask them to go ahead and do the calibration themselves.
Comment.
Well, you know, I don't even know if they have. I assume they have a United States branch, so you could, yeah, you could certainly try that, see what happens. I mean, different companies have different attitudes. Some of them will do it for free, and others will charge you, and others will just hang up on you. So certainly give it a try. Wesley, what do you want to say?
Well, I think it's the time for a little summary. We came to the conclusion, I believe, directional coupler is the best solution, and it doesn't cost $100. You can pick up a directional coupler for $2, $3 from the harvest, and there are plenty of guys selling it. That's one thing there. So, respondents in here, they talk, I did that, I do that, and I bought this and that. There are certain rules, and we should justify between ideal and real world, take into consideration loss categories, and eventually minimizing the loss and power conservation. If we say lossless, okay, we already spoke about it, is only theoretical concept, and in practice we have losses that come from conductor resistance or the imperfection of the electric material. And the losses in real directional coupler are primarily categorized as the insertion loss or coupling loss. We may minimize it. Let's say I recall one example that was directional coupler that was used in airlines, and they used the electric air as a dielectric to achieve very low loss and high power handling. Then the last one would be the power conservation. So if we take the theoretical concept, the lossless coupler, the input power is equal to the sum of the power at true port and the power at the coupled port. The isolated port is ideally terminated and receives no power. So that would be a set of rules, and no matter what you have, what you purchase, you cannot go out of that. Do you agree with that, Dr. Ray?
Yeah, but I don't think this particularly addresses miscalibrated SWR meters that Brian is discussing. I would tend to agree that although all these meters are going to be plus and minus a certain percent, I think his particular one is way off specs and should be calibrated either by himself if he's so inclined or a Daiwa.
Well, at the same time, we may say somebody likes Mercedes than Kia, better than Kia. So no matter what kind of SWR meter do we have, there is a certain rule that applies, and there is a better solution. What I was trying to bring as a point is that the best solution is very much inexpensive, and you can get those directional couplers very much for a few dollars, less than coffee in the Starbucks. You just go to the Humphreys and pick up the one that is, nobody wants to purchase. But this item is not really very much to be very hard.
but I recall they was saying no matter what is the frequency of the terrestrial coupler, it works at all frequencies you can think of. And mostly we are concerned about HF and VHF, UHF.
Well, you know, the effective word is it works. It works in a way, but the scaling adjustments change. The value that you get have to be corrected dependent upon the frequency that you're using. So, you know, a coupler will operate, but the percentage of the signal in terms of the full signal changes as you change frequency. So he mentioned repeatedly that as long as you have a correction scale for the function of this device, you could make use out of it. But without it, you can't. So I wouldn't just kind of blanket statement it works. It works with adjustment, or it works with keeping in mind certain factors, which is different than it works.
What the whole conversation is about adjustment, is about adjustment. We're talking about the device that is imperfect, or is not perfect enough, and it's doing an adjustment. So what's the difference between one adjustment and the other adjustment, or more adjustment?
Well, by the way, your microphone amplitude is very, 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 very low, so I can barely hear you. But, yeah, I mean, you can make adjustments with known calibrated devices. That's what calibration labs do for a living. But, you know, even in that, if you have a $1,000 piece of equipment, it's going to be inherently more likely to be stable. And once you calibrate it, it should pretty much stay within calibration specs for a while, as opposed to if you buy something that that fell off a truck and got dented and such, you don't quite know what the hell to make of it. You can calibrate it today, and next week it may drift out of specs. So sometimes the amount of money that you spend correlates with things, and sometimes it doesn't, because some people just kind of rob you blind. But generally speaking, if you buy equipment that costs a dollar or two, chances are it's not quite going to be as accurate as a $1,000 calibrated piece of lab equipment.
Well, when you're talking about something that was purchased for $2, but in reality it costs thousands of dollars, then the accuracy of the device, it doesn't matter how much you pay for it. I have two electron microscopes that each one costs $150,000, and I purchased it for a very, very low price, just because I purchased it new. But accuracy is the same. It doesn't matter how much you pay. Do you agree with that?
You're kind of talking apples. We're talking apples and oranges. I'm not talking about laboratory-grade equipment that's aged out or been slightly broken and you were able to fix it. Then you can get a bargain. And I'm sure you knew and you realized you were getting a bargain under those circumstances. I'm you know, talking more of you go to eBay, they're selling something for $1.50, you buy it for $1.50, it's usually either worth $1.50 or less, and you tend to get burned. You know, there are people who buy microphone elements like that. They'll buy a dozen microphone elements, all of them for a total of $10. Nine of them or eight of them are crap, pardon my French, but one or two are particularly usable, and so you basically came out ahead. But you're still kind of gambling. You're still playing Russian roulette. So it's not the same as you buying an electron microscope, you know, for peanuts, because you know, it certainly didn't cost peanuts when it came out of the factory with a factory seal in it.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. So, I was thinking about your good quality, the laboratory, which is now available to them. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Wes. Any other comments on this subject?
N2HOH.
Yes, Andy.
Good evening, Dr. Roy. Is Brian, I believe it's Brian with the Daiwa meter, is he still on frequency?
I believe so.
Brian?
CAF2CC, still here.
Alrighty. Yeah, I was just curious, what frequency were you testing with your Daiwa meter? And then I have a couple other questions. One would be, if you put it in, not knowing if it was HF or VHF or UHF, but off the top of my head, like my radio, I would test it on FM at 100 watts and see what the meter would read. But just to get a different reading and a different different form of modulation, et cetera, et cetera. So did you try that test? And again, those radios are HF radios, but we have so many shack-in-the-boxes these days, so it's hard to tell what you were doing. So again, what frequency were you using, what band, and can you check that meter against, let's say, 100 watts output out of the radio?
I did several checks. Both were on 40 meters and 20 meters into the dummy load. And I did check on AM, and I even checked on SSB, and they were both off on both bands at about the same amount. So there's definitely there's something that's miscalibrated. I didn't have exactly, when I first got the unit, I did not have this kind of issue. Something happened, and I don't know what happened, but it is not giving me the exact reading that was I used to get, which was much more accurate back then, maybe a few months ago compared to now. So I kind of wonder if this may be a component that maybe blew inside the unit as well.
Well, yes, you know, there's a lot of variables there. And it is a nice looking meter. I mean, the meter movement is has a lot of resolution to it. So if it was mine, and if it was out of warranty, I would do certain things with it, because I actually appreciate your situation, especially if it was working better before and now it's not. It's under warranty. You might want to get it repaired under warranty and be specific with your data when you send it back, and you never know what they'll do, either repair it or send you another new one. If it was out of warranty, again, I'm sympathetic with you. If it was mine, I'd calibrate it to my way of doing things, because I have a lot of different meters here. Military surplus, bird, otherwise. But, yeah, it shouldn't be that far off. Let me let it drop. As Roy was saying, it's not 5%. Plus or minus 5%, it could be 5% plus or minus. It also could be just 5 watts off, meaning I've seen meters that out of a radio that should be putting out 5 watts, and the meter will show 0, or it'll show 10, or it'll show 5. It'll be on the money. And then I'll go to 100 watts, and it could be on the money, or it could be 105 watts or 95 watts. So, yeah, there's a lot of variables there. Some meters are more accurate with 100 watts, some are meant for low wattage, so I do feel for you there. That is just too discrepant. But if the SWR portion is relative, and if that's accurate, at least you can rest assured that there's some accuracy as far as the relative forward-reverse readings, if those are accurate. You didn't mention if the reflected was accurate or not as comparison to another meter or another radio's meter.
The reflected was in check. It's the output power that is inconsistent at best and not within tolerance. And plus, it's plus or minus 10%, but that's at the full value of the needle moving. So that's at, I guess, what do you call it, full potential or something like that, or full deflection. So, you know, on that, it's supposed to be plus or minus 10%. But the SWR part of the actual meter works fine, but the power part is woefully inconsistent.
Okay, well, that's something good, then, because that's a very important reading, the SWR. All right. So then I would say, at this point, you'd have to make that decision what you would like to do. And, you know, sometimes directional couplers can be very are accurate, but then, you know, the associated circuitry with a meter, like you have your diodes in there that can be, that can change characteristic due to damage, or you can even be getting stray RF into the thing, and that could be affecting the meter reading too, just stray RF. If you have RF in the shack, I've seen that phenomenon happen. Of course, a signal diode, that's what it does, is it picks up signals. So if you got, if it's getting more than one signal, you know, this is why I'm saying, you know, RF and electronics are very complicated, and I've been through a lot of this myself, and anything can happen. So a lot of variables. I wish you luck with that. I can't think of anything off the top of my head other than it's a nice looking meter, and it should work a little bit more, be a little bit more accurate than it is, but it is relative nonetheless, and you can keep that in mind. So I'll be listening to see what your decision is, what to do with that in the future. Do you have any questions for me, Brian?
And to EPQ.
Well, I want to thank you. First of all, I'm sorry, I didn't get your call and your first name.
Okay, my name is, I call myself Handy Andy. My call is N2HUH, nice to have useful hams, like Roy. So that's my, and of course I'm always perplexed by everything because I get all the anomalies and, I get all the anomalies with equipment, it seems, and antennas, and you name it. I've been on, I used to operate on 160 meters, and I destroyed the module, electronic module in my water heater, so I had to take care of that. But anyway, I didn't solve that problem. But I've been around RF and electronics most of my life. I am a professional electronic technician. I'm a master mechanic, and if I could pat myself in the back, and 9 of my 12 radios I've acquired by repairing them. I'm looking at the only one that I've never had my fingers in. Never had a problem, so I guess that was a good choice. And over to you, Brian.
And to EPQ.
Yes, Pete, you're recognized. What would you like to say?
Yeah, I just wanted to throw something in real quick there. I happen to have an FTDX10, and that thing works great, and as far as meters work, they're very accurate. But the one thought I had, I hear a lot of good advice going on there. But the one thing I thought of is that I've had it where I had a bad cable, and it was not obvious, and so it was causing all kinds of havoc. So if nobody already thought of that, I just thought I might throw that in. That's my little 2 cents in there.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Try another jumper.
Comment on that. Yeah, I did try another patch cord, also known good, and same result.
I just wanted to say, listening to the TechNet, which I usually do when I'm doing other things, like doing a repair on a piece of equipment, I already surmised that Brian did that already. That's why I didn't suggest it. I just don't like giving suggestions like that. If he asks me, well, what can I, if anything I can do, then I would go down the line of all my suggestions of what I would think of doing as if it was my own equipment. But that's not, that wasn't the point of the net, actually, at this point. It was just making a comment about the meter, and I had a couple of questions. But Brian, I can tell Brian has covered a lot of bases from what he told me, so that's why I wouldn't make that suggestion. And I'll leave it at that and give it back to Roy. This is Handy Andy, N2HUH.
One comment, Roy.
Sure.
Okay, yeah. What I'm going to do is very simple. I'm just going to unplug this meter. I'm going to go ahead and take it over to my friend Shaq, who's using the identical meter, and we'll see how the readings compare. And that will tell me a lot. So I want to thank everyone for chiming in and giving me their opinions. It's much appreciated, and we'll see what happens. Anyway, I have my Elecraft amp and my antenna tuner, and they're very informative and very reliable as to the readings as it is. So if I need to fall back on those, I think that's the best thing that I could fall back on. But I'll check it out. Thank you so much, everyone.
You're welcome, Brian. Good luck, and come back and tell us how it all came, how it worked out.
Will do. Thank you, and I'll stay on the side.
Very good. John, are you still out there? I hope you are.
Yeah, I'm here.
You wanted to make a comment about oscilloscopes?
Yes, a comment on a digital versus analog oscilloscope, something I sort of got burnt on a little bit. One of the experiments I do in my beginning communications course is looking at an AM signal. We generate an AM signal at 1,000 kilohertz, the middle of the AM band, using a little signal generator. It's an AM signal at 1 megahertz with a 1 kilohertz modulation on it, about 50% modulation, and then we look at the spectrum of it on a spectrum analyzer. The problem came up with these digital oscilloscopes when you crank down the sweep speed low enough to display the AM envelope, that is to display the peaks and troughs of the 1 kilohertz modulation on it, you get a severe aliasing problem in that now the digital scope is sampling at a rate to completely display 1 kilohertz. But the inner envelope of the AM signal, of course, is the 1 megahertz, and that gets completely aliased, and what you get on the screen is pure garbage. And it's amazing that with the this particular type of scope, it's one of the EDU series that Tektronix makes, and you don't have control over the sample rate versus the sweep rate. They're sort of locked together. Some of the better digital scopes, you can change the length of the sample, or how long the sample is, so you don't have the aliasing problem put in. But anyway, of course, my old trusty Tektronix scope, a 475, that shows the classical AM envelope, where the carrier, you can't see the carrier, it just shows up as a fog because you're only sweeping at a rate to show the envelope, so you can't resolve individual cycles of the carrier. But it shows a beautiful AM envelope. But on these digital scopes, because of this aliasing problem, where it's sampling, you cannot display the AM signal in the way that we classically look at it. I was just wondering if anybody else with a newer digital scope has noticed a similar effect.
Okay, anyone out there? I don't own an oscilloscope, but it's not unusual. There's a lot of early digital devices that were kind of weak as far as anti-aliasing filters. Modern-day software-defined radios usually do that reasonably well, but anyone out there with similar experiences or dissimilar but still have been using digital oscilloscopes and such? Sorry, John. I'm not terribly surprised, although, modern-day digital oscilloscopes can be very cost-effective. There's some very interesting Chinese models that have so many different features that are simply locked in software. And other people, cleverer than most, figured how to break it and basically get thousands of dollars of value when they didn't pay for the licensing to unlock the Chinese oscilloscopes.
Yeah, well, it's nothing that you'd want to have an aliasing filter on, because, I mean, you don't want to limit the bandwidth of it. Well, I'll give you an example. We have an RF lab set up by a contribution from Maury Pasternak at the school there, and the scopes there, the digital scopes there, you can adjust the length of the sample. In other words, even though you might be having a low sweep speed, you can increase the sample rate so you don't get this aliasing garbage effect that where it shows a completely useless waveform. It's almost like a stroboscopic effect where you're making a rotating fan stand still by using a strobe light on it, and of course, of the digital scope is sampling, you're getting a similar effect. And the thing is that they lock the sweep speed and the sample rate together. You can't adjust them independently. If I could, sweep at a low rate but still have the very high sample rate where I could capture everything there, then you wouldn't get this aliasing effect. Of course, it would generate you'd have to have a very deep memory to be able to do that. Anyway, so I'll turn it back to Ned. That was just the only comment I had.
Okay, very good. By the way, is that model still in production, or has it been phased out?
Oh, the model, the scope, it's part of Tektronix .edu series of scopes. They make a series of scopes that are designed for educational use. They're reasonably priced. I forget the model number of it, but 1035 something or other, but it ends with a .edu, like an educational internet address. They're designed to be economical, but I won't go there as far as you get what you pay for. But anyway, it's interesting when I go into our beautiful new RF lab that was due to the donation from Mr. Pasternak, who's a Farmingdale alumnus, the scopes work fine. We get a good display there. Also, it's the reason why I can't retire, but that's another story. Okay, back to that.
AC2GS. Okay, John, thank you very much for adding that to the mix tonight. This is AC2GS with the Limark Technical Net. We still have a little bit of time left. If anyone has any other questions or comments or topics to kick around, please hit that push to talk.
And to HOH?
Yes, Andy.
Yeah, if Brian is still on frequency, I noticed that I saw a schematic for at least one of those meters, and there's one diode for forward and reflected, and the variable potentiometer. So the diodes are so cheap that I could even probably dream up a better a substitution than the ones that are in there. But the point is, you could just replace the diode without even adjusting any of the potentiometers, and or you can mark the potentiometer but still just change the diode if he finds that's if it's out of warranty, and just because I've seen the diodes when they go out of spec, they will show erroneous readings, because there's nothing else to go wrong there from what I could see. Just two different model number diodes and of course the variable potentiometer that you mentioned before. So it's pretty straightforward. It's an easy fix, and I would probably just calibrate it to my the best that I could to my meters that I have that cost more money. And actually, I have a Motorola meter that actually has the works in the slug. It's a large slug that everything's in the slug, and the meter movement is just the meter movement. Whereas even the bird, they separate the slug from it's two parts. The the strip lines in the or the directional couplers inside the meter, and the slug is separate. So, but I have a meter that actually has everything in one sealed metal container that you cannot open. So that's what I would do. I just wanted to make that point and put that one to rest for me. N2HOH.
Okay, very good, Andy. Yes, please, Brian.
Yes, I have the same schematic that I copied from the internet as well. That's about as far as I was going to go ahead and get. And I also noticed that there's a YouTube video on calibrating it, but I didn't really look at that too much. I have it just bookmarked, and I will take a look at it. But yeah, it has a series of pots that have to be gone through. And let me do the comparison first to my friend's environment. Let's see if there's a if it differs or it's the same, and then I will take it from there. I much appreciate it. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome there, Brian. Very good. Glad to be a little bit of confidence and help to you there. You're on the right track, as I could tell. See, I could a good technician could tell when another technician is actually on the ball there. So very good. Back to you, Roy, at 2HUH.
And Andrew, this is AC2GS with the Limemark Technical Desk. If anyone has any other questions or comments or topics for tonight, we got 15 minutes if you want to use them. Just hit that push to talk.
PC?
Yes, Rich?
Yeah, question. A couple of weeks ago, I asked you if a common mode choke would help a mag loop, and you said no. Why is that? Go ahead.
Well, I don't exactly remember the conversation completely, but a common mode choke is to block common mode currents in a transmission line. Magnetic loops are just kind of quirky center-fed dipole. Basically, they don't require an RF choke. They don't bleed common mode current back into your shack for the most part. So. You could put them on your transmission line, but it's probably not going to have much of an effect one way or the other.
And why not? Because the coax, is attached to the coupling loop. So there are no common mode currents being generated by that coupling loop?
Yeah, in a word. It's balanced. It's not unbalanced. I mean, sort of the way to kind of tell the difference between a balanced system and an unbalanced system is to draw a line through it. And if the right-hand side is very similar to the left-hand side, that's the balanced antenna.
All right. And common mode then only happens when you're not in balance.
Well, it's much more common when you're not in balance. Unfortunately, some balance modes, they're more dependent upon the actual mismatch of the antenna to the feed line and the length of the coaxial cable. In significant cases, if you have a length of coax that's just the right multiples of half waves and you have a less than resonant antenna, you can develop common mode reflections and such, but it's not inherent in the design of things like magnetic loops. I've never particularly seen people complain that their magnetic loops kind of fill their shacks with RF because of common mode transmission. So I would assume, and again, the problem with magnetic loops is they're not very efficient. So that would tend to go for the amount of energy going backwards in the common mode current.
So you don't think it would improve the SWR at all, right?
I don't think so. I mean, it costs you nothing to experiment and see, but I haven't I haven't read of any kind of anecdotal stories where guys put a clamp on and got incredible results. But, you know, they cost next to nothing, and if it doesn't work, you can always reuse the clamp.
Yeah, I was thinking of maybe making, you know, a one-to-one choke that's wrapped around a toroid.
Well, I mean, that is the choke. You wouldn't have it, you know, if it was just the if it didn't have the toroid, then it would just be a piece of